Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Are you sure you know how to do this?
Absolutely. There's nothing to worry about. You're in good hands.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 1, Episode 18, A Melrose Place Christmas. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarity Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
I can't believe that in all our years of doing this podcast, the holiday episode is actually happening the week of the holiday.
I feel like it's inevitably July.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
It makes me so happy. You know that I love Christmas, so I was very, very pleased when I saw that this is how it was going to shake out. Inordinately pleased, you might say. Before we get into it, some site business. We mentioned this in the last episode. It is a Patreon week this week. So this Friday, December 27th, we will have a new bonus episode for our Patreon supporters. Go to patreon.com/againwiththis if you want to join them. We will be talking about the Beverly Hills 90210 10-year reunion. It's going to get superlative. It'll be fun. So we hope you will join us for that. All right. Let us get into Melrose Place, starting with our D plot. Rhonda continues leaving. I just assume that's what it's going to be in the last place plot line until she's gone, probably.
Yeah, probably.
All right. So Rhonda's teaching her class in a Santa hat. She turns around and sees Terrence is there in a suit, not exercising. He wants to invite her to go skiing with him in Aspen. She's supposed to go see her family, but you know, he tries to get her to change her plans. And the next time we see her, it's Matt opening the door to her apartment to find her inside in full ski gear because Terrence took her shopping. That's one persuasive mofo.
Yep.
She keeps thinking there's a catch somewhere, but she hasn't figured out what it is. Catches, they're writing you out of the show, bitch. That's it.
Catches, you're not that Vanessa Williams. Sorry.
Moving on to our C-plot. Billy is too invasive about Allison's post-surgical convalescence.
As it were.
So Billy visits Allison in the hospital before her surgery. Thinking about the effect it could have on her fertility has made her realize she does want to be a mother someday, and they have this exchange clip due.
Well, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Will?
You'll. Whatever. I was just trying to, I don't know, be there for you.
Mm-hmm. We get it.
Oh, the line readings are getting increasingly doofy the last couple of episodes. Like when he was bitching at Michael in the last episode, I was like, what is this Jimmy Stewart homage? Why is this happening to us? This one is just very like Tony Soprano with the sinuses, just trying to, you know, be there for you. All right, buddy. Take an antihistamine. Thank you.
Allison says this is a hard thing to go through, especially at Christmas. Michael pops in just then to check on her and seems brisk and confident. And after he leaves, Allison confides to Billy that she's scared of, among other things, never waking up from anesthesia. He promises that won't happen to her. And then it's the next morning. Allison's prepped for surgery. We see a bunch of her neighbors are posted up in the waiting room. Rhonda is wearing this waist purse. You can see it in the visual aids. It's so big. It's like the size of an SLR camera on like a
is
belt.
Is she a meter maid? Why? I mean, I actually don't hate it.
Okay.
But it's too big. And the placement is weird. Like she needs to move it over a belt loop because it's sort of in loincloth territory.
That's
I don't know.
The problem.
Yeah.
It looks like if you've ever been to a spa where they give you like a disposable underpant, that's what it looks like. It's that size and it's that location. But every time she moves, it's like slamming against her vulva. It's like it can't possibly be comfortable and it looks hard anyway. Yeah. This is what we're talking about because this episode, as Sarah said, is very dull. Since Allison has been out of surgery for an hour, Billy tries to wheedle more information out of the nurse on the desk, claiming to be her, Allison's brother, to get around the immediate family only rule. Except the nurse remembers that he was just a friend of Allison's 20 minutes ago. And then Michael shows up and says Allison's fine. She'll be able to get pregnant whenever she chooses. Billy blurts that he wants to see her, and Michael decides to help him break the rule. Billy does this pout to smile move that I made a gif of that you can see in the visual aids that's not cute or charming.
No.
But in her room, Billy nicely puts Allison's ugly robe on her over the covers and reports the good news that she's not infertile, and she cries with relief. And then the surgeon comes in and says he can possibly send her home the next day if there's someone there to take care of her. And Billy states that he will do that. And Allison comes home the next day to see that Billy has wildly over-decorated their apartment with a bunch of stuff from his parents' house because they're going out of town for the holidays. And apparently Billy's idea of helping Allison recuperate is to give her an enormous box of Christmas lights to check if any of them is dead. No thanks. You're bad at this.
Yeah, no.
Oh, God. I don't want to do that when I'm well.
Oh, anyway. Jesus.
As he's heading out for groceries, Joe shows up with an armload of magazines. Thank you for knowing how to do this, Joe. Billy leaves, and Allison and Joe discuss what a great caretaker he is. Cough. Allison is grateful for the support, but starting to feel a bit weird about it. Joe says that Allison should tell him to back off, but she's not sure how. And later, Billy goes by Jake's to get Joe and Jake's opinions on a necklace that he bought for Allison to make this Christmas special. And Joe is so impressed by it that she is suspicious in clip three.
Is something going on between you two I don't know about?
What do you mean?
Well, this is a really nice gift to give a woman.
So you think it implies something?
I think you're asking for something.
Yeah, you would. Look, I want Jake's opinion. So do you think that this crosses the line between friendship and romance?
I think it's a tough call.
Is it 18 karat or 24?
It's 24.
Definitely crossing the line.
Have you paid off your college loans yet, Santa?
Also, I mean, we don't really see it until the end of the episode, but when we do, it is the most boring looking necklace ever. Like, it's such a nothing gift. It doesn't even have a pendant on it. Like, it's just a chain.
Yeah. I mean, it's fine, but it's also like any jewelry from a man to a, from a straight man to a straight woman is like, no.
Yeah.
Either you're fucking or you want to be fucking. That's what that means. Everyone knows this. Everyone has known this since the 1840s. Why are we wasting time on this?
Exception noted, if you're giving her, like, you know, Fimo French fry earrings, okay, that's fine. And actually, that's cute. You should do that. But otherwise, you know, don't.
Yeah.
Billy explains that buying Allison a nice gift was something he was moved to do as part of his old caretaking package, but worries that if he gives her this and she just got him some piddly thing, he's going to make things weird. And Joe uses this to prove her point about Christmas turning everything into a barter system, but we'll get to her and her whole Christmas deal. Jake thinks Billy should figure out his feelings for Allison, but Billy denies that he has any of them, and leaves. Meanwhile, in their apartment, Allison is testing lights and crying. Relatable. She's embarrassed when Billy walks in on her, and she claims it's just post-op depression, which the doctor warned her about. She tells him he can cool it on taking care of her so intensely, but Billy scoffs that it's nothing and that she would have done the same, which is probably true given that they are one another's best friends, as we keep hearing. But she feels bad because she doesn't even have any money for gifts. And he's like, who said anything about gifts? And she's relieved that he doesn't think they have to exchange presents, and they make a pact not to. Christmas morning, Billy brings Allison a couple of Christmas movies on VHS before heading out to do Christmas runs in the cab. And they wish each other a Merry Christmas wistfully. And later, Allison calls the dispatch to try to get Billy to call home because she feels bad about telling him to cool it with the solicitousness, and now thinks now that he's trying to avoid her. Maybe he's just trying to make Christmas tips? Just a thought. So Bailey comes home just as Matt lays out the Christmas buffet. Allison pulls him aside to apologize for being a bitch since she got home from the hospital. And Billy graciously says she's been no more of a bitch than usual. Yikes.
That line reading was spot on. Yikes.
I did think that was a little funny. She's grateful for all his support, but she got nervous about needing him. And he was just supposed to be someone to split the rent. And now, say it with us, he's her best friend. Billy says he cares about her, and maybe that scares him. And she feels bad that they're not exchanging gifts because he deserves a great one. And he always thought of Christmas as a time when he got things. Classic youngest child, by the way. Because he was the baby of the family. No one expected him to get them anything. And he used to think the greatest feeling in the world was running down the stairs Christmas morning, but nothing has made him feel as good as getting Allison this ugly necklace, which you can see in the visual aids. But she loves it and kisses him on the cheek. Thank God that's where we leave it. We do have more to get to, but first, we have a message for Beth Warren, a daily listener since mid-June 2019.
This is part of Beth's Christmas present. Her husband, Nick, no relation, tells us. Beth has been listening to every podcast after watching each episode. She found out about the podcast in the middle of June of this year, and it worked out that the Pop Network, where it was syndicated, was starting from episode one, season one. Yikes. Beth, are you okay?
Beth expected to have caught up with the podcast by the time our last 90210 episode dropped, but we hope she's still here because we've got 12 holiday songs we've renamed in honor of Beverly Hills 90210, one for each day of Christmas, or as we like to call it, Zipmas. Buckle up, Beth.
Number one, Silver Bells. Get it?
Nah.
Sorry.
Number two, Lo, How a Grandma Rose Air Blooming.
Number three, Oh Little Town of Methlehem.
Number four, All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Squeef.
Number five, I Saw Kelly Being a Bitch About It to Santa Claus.
Number six, Task Forcey the Snowman.
Number seven, Thanks for the Tip, Deck the Halls.
Number eight, Have Your Shelf Head a Merry Little Christmas.
Number nine, Dumb Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Number 10, Feliz Navidad, or if you prefer, Phyllis Navidad.
Number 11, Nana Got Run Over by a Reindeer, You Crud.
And number 12, Cat Butt Mouth is Coming to Town.
Don't think we didn't try to get Switch It Up onto that list, because, you know, we did. Maybe next year. Until then, from Jolly St. Nick and all of us, hear it again with this.
Merry Christmas, Beth! On to the B-plot. Jake tries to take things to the next level, but Joe has Christmas blues. So Jake is busting, as we learn. He shops for his first ever Christmas tree. Apparently, his drunk, shitty mother was always too cheap to buy them. Joe doesn't want to dampen his joy, but after so many years in New York, she's burnt out on all the bullshit that comes with Christmas. Drinking, socializing, wasting money. She states that Jake doesn't want this tree, but it's not clear if she just means the one that he's currently looking at or, in a general sense, any tree. Jake always felt he had to hide from Christmas because his mother would party and come back drunk. And when she didn't get him presents, she would tell him that Santa didn't visit poor people. Damn.
Jesus.
He just thought he was bad and got cynical about the holidays, but he doesn't want to be that way anymore. And ends up picking out a tree that's too tall for the room and shows Joe the RC car that he bought for, as he puts it, his son. Buddy, call him David. He has a dad. He does not know your biological relationship. This is not cool, but whatever.
Yeah.
Joe wants to know whom he's going to say it's from, and Jake says he'll attribute it to Santa. He really does exist. Joe says only for very lucky children, and they have a weird charged look, and then change the subject back to this giant tree. And the next day, Jake has decorated it, and Joe struggles to put the angel on top because it's way too tall. And when he helps her off the ladder, he kisses her, and she tells him not to because she's an idiot, I guess. But actually, she says, because the holidays make people do things they don't ordinarily do, and they just regret them. And Jake's trying to persist when someone shows up and saves her from having to reject him harder. It's Billy, as we already heard. And Joe is even grinchy about Christmas lights outside, but her bedhead looks amazing, as you can see in the visual aids, because I'm obsessed with her hair. Later, she has dressed up a little to bring Jake a present to put under his tree. And he asks her in, but she wants to spend Christmas alone. She didn't move across the country to leave one controlling jerk only to fall in with another one. However, this one must be hotter than the last because she lets him talk her into it. And over eggnog, Jake gets Joe to share some more about her old life in New York and specifically why it made her turn on Christmas. Apparently, her husband's family would drink and ruin dinner with their fighting. And he tells her to change her thinking like he did and gets her to dance with him to a very sappy Silent Night that is clearly not the Elvis Christmas album that he promised in order to get her in the door. And there's more kissing, which sounds like this, clip 5.
You said Elvis and eggnog.
Okay, this is why sometimes you
shall not stand.
You have to cough up for the rights. You just do. I'm sorry.
I could see Graceland being like, $1 million. Melrose is like, eh. We're too busy paying off Billy's student loans. We don't have that kind of scratch. Yikes. Yeah, that was bad.
So Joe reiterates her concern that they're just holiday horny, and Jake backs off to say he wants to be with her in whatever way she feels comfortable. And all she wants to do is make out, and he's fine with it. It makes him feel like he's in the back of a Mustang. And she dangles the possibility that if he can stay cool, she might want to fuck by New Year's or maybe Valentine's. And from here, they cross into the A-plot. So we will see them later. On to the A-plot. Michael and Matt miraculously avoid drama at the Christmas party. We find out when Michael's at the hospital with Allison that he and Jane are spending the holidays apart. She's going to her parents in Chicago. He is scheduled to work, so the official line at the start of the episode is that it's fine and no big deal. And I guess when you owe her parents money, you just have to do whatever she wants.
Yeah.
And also work.
Also, when the production can't afford to pay you and Josie Bassett, this is how the cookie crumbles.
Yeah. Although, you know, for story reasons, like, you know, he's working to pay them back. I guess it makes sense. Anywho, speaking of no big deal, Matt puts on a brave face for Rhonda as he tells her he's going to cook dinner for all the orphans in the complex instead of going to see his parents over the holidays because of the way that they reacted when he got fired. Rhonda doesn't think he should punish them and himself at Christmas because his parents love him. And Matt says that they do on their terms. And then we're at the hospital where Michael and Kimberly bring in a child who got shot. Yikes. His mother begs Michael not to let God take her child. But when we see them again, it appears as though God did exactly that. And Levin, their supervisor, informs Michael that he has to be the one to break the bad news to the kids' parents. Kimberly offers to go with him, but Levin forbids it. Like, are you seriously going to stand in the doorway and make sure that Kimberly doesn't or something? It's very dumb, but whatever. Michael's not happy. But he delivers the bad news. Everyone is sad. Levin advises Michael to brace himself for the next day since Christmas in the hospital is always a shit show. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
And the next day, Michael's pouting when Kimberly comes to try and get him to go to an ad hoc Christmas thing in the lobby. But thinking about the lady mourning her son has made him too disconsolate for eggnog. Kimberly tells him it's not his fault, but Michael says he used to love Christmas and think nothing bad could happen on that day, but now he knows that was just a child's illusion. Like, yeah?
Are you not?
You're in your late 20s. Like, figure it out. God. Michael also used to think he had a special relationship with God, but he knows better on that one, too. And Kimberly says he can't focus on the patients he lost. He needs to think about the ones he's saved. And then he gets beeped and she doesn't have to spout any more platitudes. Thank God. So back home, Matt is in Allison's apartment preparing the turkey and making some very bad decisions. Clip 4.
It says right here that it takes a 10-pound turkey about 5 hours to roast at 325.
5 hours? But I'm starving.
Then we'll cook it at 450. We just don't have that much time.
Okay.
Cool.
Couple of things.
See you all at the hospital later with salmonella.
Thank you. Yes. I don't know how Allison has gotten to be in her mid-20s without knowing basic turkey facts. And also, I've never cooked a turkey and never planned to, but I'm pretty sure that if you could cook it for a shorter length of time at a higher temperature, that is what the recipe would tell you to do.
I mean, you can. You got to brine it first.
Right.
Move Jake's bike over. Get one of those big Tupperwares. Fill it with salt, water, and cloves. You're good.
Just cook a turkey breast. That's what my mother did. It's all anyone ever wants anyway. Just saying. Exactly. So there's comedy about who's going to stuff the turkey before Allison nags him about timing his pumpkin souffle precisely. Like, now your recipe cup. Okay. Back to the hospital, where a woman's in labor and her husband, presumably, is explaining how her water broke in the middle of a restaurant and their OB's in Hawaii. He will later play Donna's boss at the fashion company where she works during her pill addiction, by the way.
He also played Robert Reed in Unauthorized, The Brady Bunch's Final Days.
Oh, yeah.
Not bad casting, actually.
Nope, that's pretty good. Looks like Michael's going to be delivering the baby, and he fronts like he knows what he's doing. And it's Christmas, and Michael already killed one patient, so this is unlikely to become a Love's Labor Lost situation.
Oh, God.
That's an ER episode. Look it up if you really want to depress yourself. Actually, don't do it. It's Christmas week. Watch it some other time.
Really, do not.
As this lady is wheeled away, Michael and Kimberly both confess that they've never actually delivered a baby before, so we'll see how this shakes out. But first, we have a question from Jennifer.
We live in Toronto, she writes.
Jennifer
and in late
writes,
December 2013, there was a huge ice storm and we lost power at our house for a few days. Fortunately, our good friends Ryan and Beth, no relation, invited us over to their place. While their house had warmth and light, they had lost cable and internet.
Jennifer goes on to write, somehow they only had one show on their PVR. Sidebar, this is what Canadians call DVRs for reasons I truly do not know. Back to Jennifer's letter. Whereas I could lose cable for about a month before I fully emptied mine. After the first day and a half, we had watched Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer more times than I care to remember and decided we needed something new.
For some reason, I had an unopened box of Season 5 Beverly Hills 90210 DVDs. I own no other BH 90210 DVDs. Ryan and I were huge 90210 fans, while our spouses clearly had better things to do in the 90s. On the night of December 23rd, 2018, we got takeout pizza, several bottles of wine, and settled in with the first disc of Season 5. A new tradition was born.
Now, every year on December 23rd, we gather with pizza and wine to watch the next 4 or 5 episodes. Ryan and I flood our Twitter with counts of halter tops and other fun 90s details. Some of our friends look forward to this, others have no clue what is going on. We've added one more family of four to the mix, our taste in wine has improved, and it has become one of my favorite holiday traditions.
This year, we will complete Season 5, and my question to you is this. What should we watch next? Another season of 90210? Which one? Melrose Place? The BH Reunion? What would you guys recommend?
Thank you so much for this question, Jennifer. Happy holidays. Weirdly, when we started doing this podcast, I had two copies of Season 5. I don't know why or how that occurred. So I don't know why, like, people are just getting gifted these, or they're turning up like that U2 album turned up on people's phones and iPods. So <Yeah. laughs> I don't know what's up with that. Someone look into this. I do have an answer to this, and I checked because, as you know, we are writing a book about Beverly Hills 90210, a real book, not a bit. We just finished it as of this recording. We have completed all of our various bits and bobs and sidebars and have even finished going through the first round of copy edits. Congratulations to us, Pat.
Yes.
But I went back and looked at our write-ups for all of the episodes, and so I have a definitive answer, and my answer is this. Please watch Season 2 of Beverly Hills 90210. Of all of the 10 seasons of the show, it's the one from which we did the most episode synopses for the book. I think it's the richest one. It's the Emily Valentine season, the Dead Scott season, great Brenda Dillon stuff, has the backdoor pilot for Melrose. There's really excellent stuff in there. Felice shows up there's really, I could go on, but I won't. That's my answer. So yeah, go backwards, go to season two. Sarah.
Yeah, I think that's a legit answer. I'm actually going to recommend season three because I think there's like, even there's the Summer of Deception, there's Reek, there's yep. Donna Martin masturbates, there's working Shadowcaster. So I agree that vis-a-vis the book, season two is your best bet. But eventually you'll be done with that in like, I don't know, 2026. So get both seasons beamed into your forehead port and just decide. Take a vote in the room.
I love it. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Jennifer.
And happy holidays to you and to your whole holiday crew.
Yes, we'll be there in spirit.
Back to the episode. Matt is on his way from Allison's back to his place to get a whisk when he spots his dad. It's awkward, but Matt invites his dad to come in, and his dad looks around all impressed because he's never been there before. Matt opens the door for reconciliation by gently saying he's surprised to see Mr. Fielding there, and Mr. Fielding sheepishly says he came to apologize, and they have this exchange, clip six.
I will always be on your side.
Yeah, that's the way I'd always hoped it would be.
The last thing I ever want to do is alienate a son who I'm so proud of. A son who I love so very much.
I'm glad because I love you too, Dad.
You think there's any way that we could put this behind us?
Absolutely.
It's great, you know, because I'm telling you, Matt, Christmas is just not the same without you. Mother, she still has dinner waiting at the house, so why don't you come with me?
Well, can I come later? Because I was making dinner with some friends of mine here.
Oh, sure, fine, whenever you can.
Okay. Dad, thank you.
I called for this clip because I was quite impressed with these two actors who I think were like really feeling the material and kind of, I mean, there's like a cheesy hug at the end, but you know, especially Mr. Fielding, it was just like a very, it like had a good ear for how a dad would be in this situation. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was sweet.
I actually noticed that the writing of that exchange was kind of artful when his dad says, I didn't want to alienate a son that I'm so proud of and that I love so very much. It's such a distancing way to put it when he's talking to that son.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Which is, I just thought it was interesting that even in trying to have this gesture of reconciliation, he still had to sort of mediate it. I thought was, you know, surprisingly deft for this show. So yeah.
Yeah. Nicely. And the actor is like on the verge of tears. So I think that's probably why that's happening. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe it's like the acting that sort of makes the writing look a little more nuanced than it is, but
yep.
And yep. Also I could be projecting because this is like the only thing in which I was not propping my eyelids open with knitting needles. Oh, it's so bad.
So we're back to the hospital. The baby's born just fine. It's a girl. Everyone's happy. Michael in particular looks very relieved. In the hallway, he and Kimberly cavil about it. The experience even got part of the way to restoring Michael's faith in God. And they're both done with their shifts, so he invites Kimberly to the orphan Christmas at the complex. And in Allison's apartment, the buffet is all laid out while both Matt and Allison marvel at how their mothers pull this off every year. Not with help from either of you, apparently.
Yeah, really.
So then everyone else rolls in. There's a surprising amount of dialogue regarding who does and does not like eggnog. I don't know. It comes up like 50 times in this episode.
I mean, this was like two half-hour episodes that got dragged out over, do you know what I mean? Or like mm-hmm. It was like 1.25 episodes that they split into two. Why?
You mean this one and last week's?
Yes, sorry.
Yes, totally. Agree. Michael shows up last with his colleague, Kimberly. No one is weirded out by this, including after we hear clip 7.
Kimberly and I made a baby together.
That's sort of cute. It's a little dorky.
Yeah. Enjoy dorky Michael while he lasts, because we're running out of episodes.
Honestly. Billy makes everyone go outside to see his big surprise. He put lights up all over the entire complex. And Joe is suddenly moved to make a toast, the gist of which is that she can't believe what great friends that she's made of all of her neighbors. Despite her initial sourness, she's living the Christmas spirit. And Allison and Billy are the last to go in with one final cheek kiss and exchange of Christmas greetings. And sorry that I love Christmas and I watched this November 24th, so I didn't hate it as much as Sarah did. Merry Christmas, everyone. I love Christmas. Let's close it up with our episode MVP.
Tara, she found the joy. I don't really have a, everyone is just kind of meh. So I will say Joe, because her hair is fucking unbelievable. It's so good.
So good. I recently, as Sarah knows, got a much shorter bob haircut, and it wasn't until I tried to actually style it myself. Every time they do it at the salon, it's always weird. I come home looking like an anchor woman. And so I have to sort of like, to see how it actually looks, style it myself, because it's quite curly. And then when I did, it was like, oh God, I got the Joe. Like, I didn't even realize it. But you know what? I'm not mad. Anyway.
No one's mad. It looks cute.
Enough about me. I'm going to say Michael again for the second week in a row. He successfully delivered a baby. Good job. Least valuable player. Billy, don't make the woman recovering from surgery mess around with your dumb lights.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, yeah, Billy. Although, honorable mention to whoever did Matt's hair, it's getting so insane and Trumpy and weird. It's so bad. I hope he cuts it soon. It's so terrible. This is a good looking kid.
Honorable mention to Jake's off-screen mother for her terrible mothering in his youth, because yikes, that story. Oof.
Yeah, damn.
And that's it.
Sure is. Next time on Again With This, future off-screen Matt wife, Sydney arrives. Can you believe that? I thought she didn't show up till like season four. Anyway, Sydney arrives, Terrence proposes, and the specter of Billison is looming ever larger. Ditto Matt's hair, which you can see along with a number of other fashion don'ts in our visual aids. Those for this and every other episode of Again With This are on our website, againwiththispodcast.com, and sometimes on our Twitter account, at AWT90210. Or hop Billy's taxi over to our Patreon page, that's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm post-op depression Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Disputed Necklace Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Christmas Baby David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.